Tonight on Vancouver Theatre, a play by J. Michael Yates. The Panel.
Welcome once again to Panel. The game everyone waits for sooner or later. Wait patiently, and one of these days we'll be introducing you on the panel. But right now it's time for the game, and here's our genial host.
Thank you, Mr. Aste Genanse, thank you. I can see we have an extraordinary audience, full of life and ready for the game. It's a great privilege to be here, to participate in such a grand tradition. The panel, as all of us know, is the oldest program in history. Some of us are born audience, some panelists, and some genial hosts. It is a profound honor to be here. Thank you. Thank you. And now, without further ado, let's introduce our distinguished panel. From left to right, we have Mr. Distinguished Philosopher.
Thank you, Mr. Genial Host, and it is a pleasure to present, on my left, Mrs. Excellent Housewife.
Thank you, and on my left, Miss Prize-winning Journalist.
Thank you, and I'm happy to present, last but not least, Mr. Successful Businessman, on my left.
Thank you.
This is your offstage announcer. As all of you at home know, each panelist is allowed a specific but unspecified number of questions.
And now, of course, our guest of honor, the mystery guest, rather our mystery voice, because we only hear him, and sometimes we don't even hear him or her, whatever the case. Yes, he or she is behind the screen.
This is your offstage announcer again. When time is up, time is up. Any question asked at the final bell won't matter anyway. It will be too late, far too late, later than it's ever been before.
And now, panelists, listen carefully to the mystery voice.
Every program begins and ends on time. No two programs are ever the same.
Are you ready, panel?
Oh, yes.
Sure, indeed.
I shall invoke the mystery voice. Mr. Mystery Voice, we are ready. We are listening.
Shh. I don't hear anything.
Did you hear anything?
No.
I didn't hear anything either.
Hey, what is that?
Anything wrong with the equipment?
Huh. What was that? I think I heard it.
We must ask the audience to be very quiet in order that the panelists can hear the mystery voice.
I still don't hear anything. Must be something wrong with the equipment. After all, a medium is a medium only insofar as it could...
Very pragmatic, sir. However, it's obvious that you have no metaphysics.
Well, microphones and television cameras are as much part of my business as my typewriter.
Shh.
I can't say I can actually hear the mystery voice, but I sense its presence. Call it intuition if you want to.
In classical use, intuition is to know a thing as it would know itself, if it could know itself. I doubt that's what you mean, madam.
As long as the show's ratings hold up and the advertisers are happy, there can be a mystery voice or no mystery voice.
Shh! Panelists, I'm happy to inform you that there is a mystery voice. I can hear it, and you must have faith.
Well, I was sure.
I have never doubted. There is, after all, sewing, catechism, civil law, one clock on the wall.
Well, then you, Mr. Genial Host, are the medium.
Of course. Ah.
Personally, I wouldn't want to have that responsibility.
Well, it is a privilege and a crutch.
I'm unconvinced.
I beg your pardon?
I don't hear a damn thing.
Oh, Mr. Prize-winning journalist, I'm afraid I must remind you we're on the air.
Curious that every Neil host assumes he's really on the air.
That's bloody ridiculous. I must remind you, there's a lady present.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, now listen, all of you. It's my business to report what I see and what I hear. Now, I see a screen behind which a mystery being allegedly stands. But I see a screen, not a man. And I hear nothing but our silly chatter.
Ha ha!
The pot calls the kettle black, my good man.
Oh.
Why, you journalists profess objectivity?
Well, I do.
Outrageous. Why, you criminals with your cameras, your microphones, your typewriters. You've been falsifying history since reportage began.
Hey, no, just
now,
a
panelists,
minute here.
Panelists, remember our time limits. Remember, programs are not infinite.
Our genial host should bear that in mind himself.
What exactly do you mean?
I mean that the smug picture which appears on your television, madam, the self-possessed news reporter, fresh from the makeup room, who reads the copy before him with carefully edited films and photographs appearing on the screen behind him, that man is misrepresenting the world to you and your family.
Oh, I misrepresent the world to the world?
Precisely.
Well, nevertheless, all the world knows of itself is what it sees, hears, and reads via the media.
Indeed, but it's an utterly false impression.
Gentlemen, wasn't it St. Augustine who said, I must know to believe and believe to know?
Do you mean to tell me I can't believe the newscast?
Of course not. Not only is the press told by the government what it may broadcast or what it may not, but there are many other variables.
Now the usual momentum of the panel begins. It makes the time pass more quickly, and thus we accelerate our motion towards death. Is that desirable? We speak of killing time, but it seems the time reciprocates in kind. Biologically, we are all streaking toward death at the rate of some 4,500 heartbeats per hour.
I'm sorry, Mr. Distinguished Philosopher. I simply don't understand.
Mrs. Excellent Housewife.
I prefer that you call me Mrs. Excellent Homemaker.
Of course, Mrs. Excellent Homemaker.
Thank you.
The cameraman on the scene at a riot, a demonstration, a war front, can record only as much as he can crowd into the frame of... What is it a cameraman sees through?
The viewfinder.
The viewfinder, thank you. He can see only as much as the viewfinder, the lens, sees. Think of it. The cameraman at one edge of the crowd, while the real action may be happening on the other side.
I see.
Moreover, if something significant were happening right in front of him, his camera might break down or run out of film. Yet all you'd see at home is what little he managed to record.
Well, why can't they provide more cameramen and cameras?
Oh, certainly. That way we'd have to give a camera to everyone on Earth. For the greater glory of accuracy and objectivity, we'd have time for nothing but taking pictures. There'd be nothing on newscasts but film footage of people shooting footage of film. Oh, yeah, and there's another bottleneck. There isn't enough available TV time to show even a small percent of the footage shot. Federal funds must be spent in defense and raising the standard of living, not on nonsense.
Bravo!
Yes, I'm sure the PTA would never agree to such a proposal. We can't have our children running the streets with cameras. And I work for several fundraising campaigns. There are needy adults, culturally deprived zones, deformed children, retarded children, maimed veterans, misguided teenagers, lunatics, alcoholics, drug addicts, smokers, sexual perverts.
The mystery being appreciates all you've just said.
No.
If I might continue.
Oh, yes, of course, Mr. Distinguished Philosopher.
And we must consider as well, Mrs. Excellent Housewife, rather, Mrs. Excellent Homemaker, we must consider the bias of the reporter himself.
If,
for example, he happens to be rather conservative, a report on the scene of a riot involving hippies and police. For example, this year's convention of the Democratic Party in the United States of America. His report will tend to favor the police.
Oh, come
it
on.
It will be implied that the young people incited the violence, or he could slant the report in favor of the demonstrators, as was indeed the case. Since the members of the press dreamed they were being abused by the police.
Dreamed? Dreamed? Where were you, you unctuous little imbecile? Where were you when the dirt hit the fan? Were you there?
I approve of neither the United States television nor any of the popular media.
Oh, and how is it you know anything about it at all?
What happened there is common knowledge.
Gossip. Sheer gossip, like wives over the back fence.
Oh, wait a minute now. What are people to talk to each other about, unless it's other people? Gossip isn't simply malicious.
This is your offstage announcer once again. We're almost at the midpoint of tonight's program. Words always precede the violence you've all been waiting for, like the overture of an opera. like foreplay before sexual union, like diplomatic threats before a war.
To him who listens, the mystery voice speaks.
I heard it.
Of course you did.
B.S. And while we're talking about illusion and reality, let me ask you, Mr. Distinguished Philosopher, where you get the information you drone out to your classes at the university?
From books, largely. And
yeah, and where do books come from?
From learned men.
And learned men, I suppose, are capable of more objectivity than newsmen, than men on the streets?
Such a question, I think, requires that we render unto
Caesar.
Do
the gospel of the Bible agree?
They were written by 4 different men.
Well, for all we know, each gospel was written by 100 different men. We have no idea how many hands the text passed through before we received them in their present state.
I agree, but
moreover,
you've got to
every time the Bible is translated, it reads differently.
It's obvious that books, too, are just as unreliable as the other media. Now, look, I'd like to address a question to Mr. Distinguished Philosopher.
The mystery voice thinks it only just that you should have your say, Mr. Successful Businessman.
Well, look, I believe in education.
Of course. No one would deny the value of education.
Yes, but I question the value of a child sitting through years of classes where people like you, Mr. Distinguished Philosopher, raise nothing but issues which have no application to everyday life. Well, you provide answers to questions which don't exist as far as I'm concerned.
I ask only what I consider vital human questions.
Yeah, well, what you do, in fact, is confuse our children and make them almost entirely unfit for their responsibilities in the ranks of business. Well, every year I hire hundreds of college graduates. I have to reprogram them before they're of any value to my company.
What do you mean, reprogram?
Well,
are
I mean...
our children robots? Machine computers?
That's precisely how big business looks at them, madam, isn't it?
All right. Retrain would have been a better choice of words. What I mean to say is, I have to recast their minds to bring them to bear on matters like earning a living and providing for a family.
Oh, I see what you mean.
What he means is that you, Mr. Distinguished Philosopher, are unqualified to deal with the so-called vital human questions.
Are you married, Mr. Philosopher?
No, I've always lived alone.
Yeah,
well,
sure.
You see, there's never been time, though. What with my researches, my meditations,
Do you ever go down into the streets and confront your fellow man? Confrontation, what? Mr. Philosopher. Contact, Mr. Philosopher.
I'll bet he's never even made love.
No.
Can you imagine?
Oh, he's just a pervert like the rest of them.
I say it is you, Mr. Philosopher, whose ineptitude leads our students to demonstrate with rioting and sit-ins. Because of you and your kind, the stock market zigzags like a seismograph.
Definitely.
Oh, don't look so worried, Mr. Distinguished Philosopher. All approaches are equal in the consideration of the mystery voice.
I'm responsible for student unrest? Philosophers? Universities? Such an accusation from the two of you. Never on earth were there more violent and malicious vermin than the members of the press, inflaming one side against the other, thriving on civil disobedience and social aberration. Why, it's you, of course, who remind our children of the responsibilities and possibilities of war, who paint their minds with blood, and it is you, you, Mr. Successful Businessman, who drives the nation to war with pressure for more and more consumption for your overproduction.
Show teenagers a demonstration happening somewhere across the continent, and you'll have demonstrations everywhere before long.
What we really need is qualified people to decide what parts of the news are fit for our children.
My God, what about freedom of the press? Freedom of the press!
You mean license, my good man!
See if you can incorporate that into your philosophy, you old fool.
This is your offstage announcer. The journalist has just dragged the philosopher out of his seat by his lapels.
Nothing like
panelists.
Children.
Panelists. Mr. Prize-winning journalist, Mr. Distinguished Philosopher, mortal violence will not lead you to the identity of the mystery voice.
Oh, to hell with the mystery voice.
This is your offstage announcer. The prize-winning journalist is beating the distinguished philosopher's head against a corner of the table behind which the panelists are seated. The philosopher bleeding extremely from a cut over his left eye, and... Yes, it looks like it. The philosopher has fallen to the floor either unconscious or dead. The journalist looks toward our genial host and the other two panelists as if to see whether it's thumbs up or down for the philosopher. But none of them are paying any attention. After a glance toward the screen that stands between Mystery Voice and panelists, Mr. Prize-winning journalist takes his seat.
Ah, you've rejoined us. Mr. Successful Businessman was just saying we must distinguish between illusion and reality.
There's no other way.
And while it's rather an honor to appear on this program, we can't really include listening for the Mystery Voice among the practical matters of economics.
Oh, but I disagree. We must protect our loved ones.
Oh, you want to go through the motions as an insurance,
Not at all.
Oh, just in case there really is a Mystery Voice.
I'm in favor of handing children the naked truth.
But children live in their imaginations. It's human nature to believe in those things.
The mystery being rejoices to hear you say that, Mrs. Excellent Homemaker.
According to you, Mr. Genial Host.
This is to let you know that the distinguished philosopher appears not to be dead after all. The journalist hasn't noticed, but the philosopher is now standing. He's picked up a microphone stand. I think he plans to strike the journalist.
Mr. Prize-winning journalist, do you believe in the mystery being? Do you believe?
I believe in radio, I believe in television, in the newspapers, in billboards. And I believe in participation in the panel.
Do you believe?
In the Mystery Voice? No.
The philosopher has just dealt the journalist what must be a death blow in the back of the neck with the base of a microphone stand. Yes? The journalist is quite dead.
Oh, my goodness.
Panelists, this is a solemn moment. One has just vanished from our midst.
We'll miss him.
So we shall.
For those of you who have tuned in late, this is The Panel, broadcasting's oldest and most exciting game. Mr. Distinguished Philosopher has just extinguished Mr. Prize-winning Journalist with a single blow from the base of a microphone stand.
No matter what happens, mythologically speaking, we must acknowledge that all human values, therefore all communication, has been based on belief in the Mystery Voice. This is as true of the believer as the heretic. A man may disavow belief in the Mystery Voice, but the patterns and modulations of this thought reaffirm his faith, often without his being conscious of it.
Was it necessary that the journalist die in that case?
The ways of the Mystery Voice are mysterious.
In all cultures, it's been essential that the Mystery Voice remain mysterious, a secret in the heart of a race.
I'm sorry, Mr. Distinguished Philosopher, but I see that your time is up.
Oh, no, not yet. I'm not prepared, you see. I left my notes in my study. Oh, my notes! My notes of my last words!
This is your offstage announcer. Most of you will recall my brief synopsis of the rules at the beginning of the program. Each panelist is allotted a specific but unspecified number of questions and a specific but unspecified period of time. If precedent holds fast, as it always has in the past, we haven't long to wait.
A little more time.
Please, Mr. Philosopher, collect yourself. Get a hold of yourself.
But I implore you. But the gods granted Socrates his last speech.
It's very selfish of you to take time allotted to other panelists.
My fellow panelists, I beseech you, Mr. Genial Host.
The philosopher has just raced across to the screen.
Oh, great Mystery Voice.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's nothing we can do.
No, nothing, unfortunately. Mr. Philosopher, can you hear anything there at the screen?
You fools! Fools! Don't you realize I'm about to die? Die! Do you hear me? Die!
Remember the noble bearing of your great Socrates.
Fellow panelists, we're all going to die. We're going to decay. Fellow panelists, we're going to stink. Can't you understand? A lifetime of high consciousness, of intense study, a lifetime of faith is coming to a close. I'm being snuffed out.
Try to remember that the prize-winning journalist's life was as important to him as yours is to you.
That is no consolation.
Mr. Distinguished Philosopher, your time is up.
I...
It's really too bad.
But excellent box office.
How crass.
What makes money works. What doesn't, doesn't. It's quite simple, really. Competition for money is the heartbeat of the race. Money flows like blood, and so must be constantly stimulated by advertising, speculation, war, whatever's necessary.
What of the human?
Human nature is continuously being redefined according to its relation to money. Religion, art, and science simply attempt to justify and or camouflage the fact. Read your Ten Commandments again with that in mind.
What about thou shalt not commit adultery?
People, too, are money. Such a commandment, you can be sure, was written by a sniveling old coward who feared he hadn't sufficient authority to keep his wife in her traces.
In her traces?
Sure.
Is your opinion of women that low?
Lower.
How can you think that, Mr. Successful Businessman?
I think that way, therefore I am successful. Therefore I exist, to put it more traditionally. What astounds me is that you dream you think.
Please.
It's not how well you think that we should take notice of, but that you think at all.
Then what are we women for?
I'm about to show you.
How dare you? What? Take your hands off my person.
Come on.
I am a married mother. Have you no respect for...
No, shut up. Come on.
Oh, help. Help me, someone. Mr. Philosopher.
Dead.
Mr. Journalist.
Dead.
Mr. Genial Host.
I am the medium, you see. Between the beginning and the end is the voice, the broadcast, the small noise in the wilderness.
Call on me. I'll help you.
This is your offstage announcer. I must say we've had more interesting assaults and or seductions in previous programs. He doesn't show enough zeal and she enough enthusiasm. She appears to be shouting toward the screen, but they're too far from their microphones for us to make out precisely what's going on, verbally. Ah, the bell. One of them is... Ah, yes, it's the excellent housewife. The businessman is rising now and returning to his place at the panel. He's wearing a very expensive suit, which I'm afraid has survived rather badly.
That was rotten of you.
Dear Mr. Businessman, we have no control over such things.
Ah.
No, truly. I had nothing to do with it.
Well, you might have waited.
In the long run, it wouldn't have made any difference. I mean, it won't make any difference.
That's what you think.
As a matter of curiosity, what were her last words?
Oh, something about immortality, that her children and her children's children will live on and on.
They'll all be here on the panel.
Women don't think, they only hope.
Hmm. Well, look at our clock, Mr. Businessman.
Mm-hmm.
It would seem...
Oh, it won't work, Mr. Genial Host.
You don't really suppose you'll exceed your time.
Why not?
Why, it's unheard of.
So what? People acknowledge that time is a limit because mountebanks like you persuade them. I'm unpersuaded.
It will soon be over for you too, Mr. Successful Businessman.
On the contrary.
Your offstage announcer here. This is extraordinary, ladies and gentlemen. The businessman has drawn a gun. As you know, it is a rare, rare thing indeed that a businessman shows any imagination. This is surprising. It may turn what has been until now an extremely usual program into a truly memorable show.
I'll show you.
Oh, no. Surely you don't really believe the Street Voice would countenance your killing me.
Mr. Successful Businessman has advanced across the stage to the platform on which Mr. Genial Host sits. He's mounted the steps and place the muzzle of the weapon against the host's heart.
Let's try and see. What's there to lose?
No.
Call on the mystery voice to help you.
The mystery voice is not to be reduced to banalities.
Very well.
No! Mystery voice, deliver me, mystery voice!
Mr. Successful Businessman is beside himself with laughter.
You didn't intend to shoot me?
I'm going to sit right here and make you watch me live forever.
You refuse to believe your time is almost up.
I refuse.
You challenge nature.
I ignore it. Nah. However, the prospect of spending eternity here with you on this empty stage isn't very interesting. So suppose I take the matter out of nature's hands, like this.
No, it's nature's unquestionable right to destroy you. Mystery voice, intervene!
This is your offstage announcer. Ladies and gentlemen, this is unprecedented. With a little warning, Mr. Successful Businessman turned the gun to his temple and blew half his head away. Only half his smile remains on his now twitching corpse. Those of you who tune in regularly will sense the import of this. This could well lead to complete revision of programming policy. Mr. Genial Host sits there, stunned by the spectacle we've just witnessed. No, he's rising now and moving toward the screen, placing his palms flat against it and his face.
Mystery voice. Great mystery voice, why did you fail me? Did you know, even then, that my life was not really in danger? Did you design his suicide? Answer me. Answer me, damn you!
Mr. Genial Host has pierced the screen, and the screen has fallen over. As we all know, there's nothing behind it. He's hopelessly entangled in the framework and fabric of the screen. It would appear that after the refreshing episode provided us by Mr. Successful Businessman, things have returned to the merest ordinary. Mr. Genial Host has disappointed himself and us, like all genial hosts before him. I shall now turn the switch on again for automatic applause. And you shall hear what the genial host hears. I'm opening my offstage microphone and intensifying the echo effect.
Mr. Genial Host?
Yes?
Your time is up.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've enjoyed having you with us once again on The Panel. We hope you'll stay tuned. In a few moments, we'll have replaced the screen, the microphone stand ruined by Mr. Prize-winning journalist's neck, and, of course, host and panelists. While we're waiting, we present for your listening pleasure this musical interlude.
You have just heard The Panel, a play by J. Michael Yates. In the cast were Kathy Johnson as Mrs. Excellent Housewife, Joe Golland as Mr. Distinguished Philosopher, Wally Marsh as Mr. Successful Businessman, Doug Masters as Mr. Prize-winning Journalist, Jimmy Johnson as the Genial Host, and John Sparks as the Offstage Announcer. The play was produced and directed by Imbert Orchard with the technical assistance of Jerry Stanley and sound effects by Lars Eastholm. This is Michael Crampton speaking. This is a CBC Vancouver production.